Good afternoon. I'm Audrey Knight, and this is Kim Fallon. I'm from the Division of Public Health, and Kim is from the Medical Examiner's Office. And our SUID project team consists of, from Public Health, me, and Joanne Miles, who is our Injury Surveillance Program Coordinator. And then we collaborate closely with the Medical Examiner's Office with Dr. Tom Andrew, who is our Chief Medical Examiner, Kim Fallon, who's our Chief Forensic Investigator, and Dee Dee Foote, who is our Project Data Clerk, who enters and collects the information.
So the money from, that we get from the grant comes to the Bureau of Maternal and Child Health, and then it goes to Audrey's group, but most of it ends up coming from there over to our office, the Office of Chief Medical Examiner, because we have the legal authority to get medical records. And that's mostly what we use the grant money for, hiring the SUID data clerk. And she collects the records, the prenatal records, the labor and delivery records, pediatrician or PCP records. And if there was an attempt made to resuscitate the infant, she'll get the EMS records and the emergency department records. She gets all of that, and she inputs it into the case registry. She also brings it to the meetings when we do the review meetings. Our SUID review group is an offshoot of the child fatality group. There are people on the, a lot of the same people are on the both groups. We also have a neonatologist, a WIC person, somebody from a lactation consultant, HIV nurse. There's midwives on our SUID group too. And then from those meetings, we end up with recommendations that we follow up on. So some of the recommendations that we've had are articles. There's a pediatrician on the committee, and she puts articles in the pediatric newsletter for the state of New Hampshire. There's a newsletter for police standards and training, and somebody from that group is on the meeting committee, and they'll put articles in their newsletter. We've had policy changes. EMS, there's somebody from EMS on the committee, and what they've done at our request is they've changed their protocols, and when they have a scene where an infant has been found unresponsive and usually in cardiac arrest, they'll do carbon monoxide testing of that room. Another change we've asked an agency to make, and that's the emergency departments, is to get rectal temperatures and document the time they're taken. They routinely don't get rectal temps on infants because they're trying to resuscitate them, and once they're done, they don't do anything further. So we've gotten that, and we've had a few cases where the temp has been around 105 and 106, and that coupled with the scene investigation, turned out the infant died from hyperthermia, from overbundling in an overly warm room. Another change that we've made, we do quality assurance, and we've asked our investigators to do better doll reenactments. Previously, we weren't using those placed and found cards, and Terry had them in some of her slides. So we have a better idea of what the pictures mean. There's a better written description of the scene. One of our recent cases, the investigator wrote a great description of the 10 layers of fluffy bedding that the infant was on. They're taking better pictures. They'll pull back one side of the bedding and then another layer of the bedding and another layer and another layer. We've had an infant on three mattresses, and they get pictures of that. So we're doing those things. We've also added other questions like, you know, did the infant regularly use a pacifier? Were they using one when they died? We've asked questions about pets in the house. Added smoking questions, not just did the mother smoke, but did she smoke when she was pregnant? Does anybody smoke around the infant? So we've done things like that to improve the investigations.
Some of the other things we've done as an offshoot of the recommendations are more presentations and training. We've been more active training home visitors so that when people go into the home, they can see exactly where the baby slept and ask questions. We're also working more with the WIC program as a spinoff from the recommendations. We also are getting involved in training DCYF staff so that when they make home visits, they can ask and to see where the baby is sleeping. So more presentations and trainings, also with hospital nurses, trying to get them to do better in carrying out the AAP recommendations. We just had last Tuesday our first Safe Sleep Symposium, and Terry Covington was one of our guest speakers, and we had over 140 registered for the day, and it was targeting folks who are directly or indirectly involved with pregnant or newly parenting parents and families, and had a great overview and great success with that. We also have launched the Safe Sleep campaign, and some of the things we've done, and a lot of that has been with our CDC funds, is the first thing we did was we went out and got this trifold, which it's such a seemingly little gesture, but it's enabled us to get to a lot of conferences throughout the state of New Hampshire and expand our range. So we've been at school nurse conferences, immunization conferences where there are 300 people, early childhood conferences. This week it's at the foster parent training conference. So it's been a way to educate people, including conference hotel staff, that as they're walking through putting muffins and fresh juice out, they'll stop and I'll say, you know, do you know about this? And things have changed. And it's a great way to educate people and just get the information out. We've also, as a spinoff in our campaign, collaborated more with WIC. WIC events like the Diaper Derby and Mom's Night Out, events where they reach several hundred people at malls and have goodie bags, and we've enclosed our information. One thing we decided to do was instead of reinvent the wheel with new handouts, we went with some existing ones. The three that are pictured there are the ones we really decided to mass produce with our local New Hampshire information. The Consumer Product Safety Commission Bear is Best, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission Safety Alert about the dangers of adult bed, in addition to the national campaign, what does the safe sleep environment look like? We still have all the other national campaign material available, but these three are the ones we really push everywhere we go. We're also doing more presentations and trainings, as I mentioned. We're newly partnering with folks like the New Hampshire Children's Trust and March of Dimes, who were co-sponsors of our recent Safe Sleep Symposium. We're working with the Home Visiting Program to get a train-the-trainer curriculum going so that we can do more with them, and we've been involving child care licensing more. And then for October, SIDS and Suicide Awareness Month, we had stuff on our public health website. We were doing tweets a couple of times a week from our public health tweet. Our director of public health was on a local TV station talking about SUID. We got more articles out, and we just really pushed our handouts. Also, at the Cribs for Kids conference, we heard about this book, Sleep Baby, Soft and Snug, which a pediatric cardiologist had lost his son to unsafe sleep a couple of years ago, and he worked with someone to put this lovely book. They're not making money of it. It goes all back into the book. They'll sell for large quantities for like $2 a book for cases of 60, and it's a lovely paperback book that has all the basic principles of safe sleep with the AAP recommendations in the back. So the care provider, as they're learning to get the message, reading to get the message out, they're also being reinforced about what the AAP recommendations are. So we're giving these out to the families that we fund for home visiting programs, and then all the folks who are on our committees and attend our conferences. We gave one to every symposium attendee, and we're really pushing this and including the order form for these in our whenever we do handouts. And if you're interested, if you just Google Charlie's Kids, you'll get information on it. It's a great book. So our findings, we have small numbers. Fortunately, in New Hampshire, we have about 20 sudden and unexpected infant deaths per year. And of those, maybe about 5 to 10 end up being SIDS or undetermined. So from the time we started entering data into our registry in 2011, our 2 years of data, we really only had 14 cases that were New Hampshire resident, New Hampshire deaf infants in a sleep setting. And of those, of the 14, 7 ended up being diagnosed as SIDS and 7 were undetermined. And of those, 86% were white, 71% not Hispanic or Latino, 71% were male, 71% on Medicaid, and 36% had low birth weight. Not surprising. We knew this all anecdotally, but now we could back it up with facts. For risk factors, when we looked at the data that we were pulling from the case registry, more than half smoked before or after birth, 100% soft bedding, 43% bed sharing, 64% breastfeeding, which was interesting because we hadn't expected such a high percentage. A good chunk, 79%, were getting regular prenatal care, another good surprise. Firm sleep mattress, 57%, and place supine, 43%, not surprising. So what we learned from that is, as I said, this data proved to us what anecdotally we were thinking. And that is that, you know, so those were our key issues. So now it makes us really want to target low income, since it really documented that that's who we need to focus on. I mean, our educational efforts will be on everyone, but especially targeting the Medicaid population. Since so many women, 79% of our cases, were getting prenatal care, we want to reach the OB providers. Our state-funded community health centers were doing a good job getting the message out, but our private OBs, we really need to penetrate. So we're doing a mailing this month of to 1,200 OBs, pediatricians, and family practice docs to really try to integrate with the OB providers especially. Working with those providing breastfeeding education, we have a very strong New Hampshire Breastfeeding Task Force, so we're working with the lactation consultants. We also have one on our review committee, and that's helping to get the message out, as well as working with WIC and the peer supports, doing education and training with them. We need to link up with our tobacco program. I sit across the hall from tobacco. We really haven't done much. We need to integrate more with our state tobacco program. And then again, to continue to emphasize the basics, the supine position, firm flat mattress, no bedding, close but separate. So that's it. I guess we'll have questions at the end. Right? Or any questions? How are we getting it out there? For the emergency room nurses, we have one on our review committee, and she brought the information back and shared it at an emergency department nurse meeting. And it's up to each nurse to add it to their protocols in their hospitals. I'm not sure that there's anything. Did you go to that meeting?
I didn't go to that meeting, but another way we're doing it is our investigators are doing two things when they get notified of infant death, and one is calling the emergency department where the infant is, if it was brought to an emergency department, because some of them are not, but asking the hospital to get the rectal temp and document the time it was taken. The other thing we're doing is calling the police and asking them to secure the scene where the infant died so we can see the sleep environment, and making sure that they know securing the scene doesn't mean pack it all up and take it away, which has happened a couple times. But leave it as it is.
For the perinatal nurses, they're slowly coming on board. We have one who works with all the perinatal nurses in the state, and I've presented at her meetings about every other year I do a presentation, and we also have two other perinatal nurses on our review committee. They're trying to integrate things, but we're about to do a survey for all our hospitals to say, do you have a policy? What's the actual practice that you're doing? Would you like training? And then see what that shows. But we're constantly trying. I mean, they should know better. But yet, anecdotally, we have 20 birth hospitals in the state. We're still hearing stories that, you know, they're putting twins together, that they're not getting the message out. And we actually had a death 2 years ago of a mom who had not yet been discharged, who had her breastfed baby in bed in the hospital, who died. So that sort of freaked them, and that the final diagnosis was undetermined because was it SIDS? Was it accidental suffocation? So we're about to launch some things.
There's actually also a model program in Baltimore where part of their issue, what they identified as the new baby-friendly hospitals in terms of NICUs and stuff, and the kangaroo care for the preemies and what have you. And getting people to realize when they leave they shouldn't be practicing that when they go home. That's the kangaroo care, holding the baby really with you. But that hospital actually, it's some Scott Krugman, who's he's on staff there. They started a project when they find out that a baby died, they send a letter to the birth hospital to let them know that one of their babies